Hi everyone, and welcome to the Business of Customer Love podcast, brought to you by Mention Me. I'm your host Simeon Atkins, and thanks for joining us today. Growing your brand through customer love might seem like an idea that belongs in the company cafe rather than the boardroom. But identifying, growing, and activating a base of loyal fans is serious business, and the results of harnessing customer advocacy can be truly transformational for both your company and your customers. We gather experts from across the space to shine a light on how you can unleash a virtuous cycle of sustainable organic growth where your best customers keep coming back and bringing their friends too. So let's get into today's episode. Hello everyone, and welcome to this special landmark edition of The Business of Customer Love. Today marks our 50th episode, and it really has been quite a journey from when we launched the show last year. Now, I'm incredibly fortunate to have the opportunity to speak to some of the best minds in customer experience on a topic that you can't help but feel inspired and uplifted by. And really, I wanted to use this episode to reflect back on some of the key takeaways that have helped me, and hopefully all of you, really understand and appreciate the power of customer love and how it can help transform not only business economics, but also the lives of everyday consumers. Now, at the start of each episode, I ask my guests to share a time recently where, as a consumer, they've experienced customer love firsthand and the impact that that has had on them as a consumer. While I initially expected to hear about the likely candidates, your Apples, your Disneys, etc., in almost every instance, I've been given an example of companies I've never even heard of. One guest gave the example of Scott's Plumbing, an independent business where Scott and his son go above and beyond to deliver exceptional customer support. And then another shared a really harrowing tale of when her son got into a car crash and the owner of the local body shop personally went out of her way to look after him until she arrived. Now, often there's a perception that you need to sell an exciting product or service to get people to love you. What I've learned is that is unequivocally false. No matter what business you're in, the customers you sell to, the markets you serve, you have the chance to create a base of loyal superfans who come back and tell their friends by delivering them an exceptional customer experience. And in fact, I would argue that if you work in an industry that isn't perceived to be that exciting or differentiated, you have an even bigger opportunity to stand out and gain a real competitive advantage by focusing on customer happiness. And an incredible example of this is Pink Zebra Moving, founded by Ron Holt. Ron is on a mission to revolutionize the removal industry through customer love. Here's a taste of the wonderful things that Pink Zebra are doing every day for their customers.
So one of the things that we're probably most known for, it's kind of become our trademark, is the night before a move, the day before a move, I should say, we contact our customers and we ask a lot of normal practical questions. But toward the end of that practical conversation, we then say, hey, you know, we're going to put a show on for you. We think moving is theater. We think we can make moving fun. And so how we like to get started with that show is we like to feed you guys. You guys are going to be busy tonight, maybe even a little bit of stress going on because tomorrow's a big day. So we're going to send you some food tonight. You pick what it is. Maybe it's pizza. Maybe it's Tex-Mex, you know, but either way, we're going to send some food your way and it's on us. And we look forward to doing it. Customers love that. Most people nowadays know about it, and so they actually ask about it. At one point, it was a bit of a surprise, and it always made people get emotional. We've seen people cry when we offered the food. And simple thing, you know, it's just food. Anybody can, or, you know, deliver food to someone, but we do it every single time we serve a customer, and it starts, again, the relationship off in a strong way. Another thing that we've become real known for, this is probably one of our more fun things that we do. We call it a surprise box. Again, if you remember, there's three phases: before, during, and after. The after phase of a move usually is just disregarded. Like there's no such thing typically as the after part of a move. And so we thought there was an opportunity there to still strengthen and build a relationship with our customers. So we leave behind a surprise box. Inside the box is all sorts of goodies, pretty generic ones in some cases, just candy and chocolates and trinkets and things of that nature. It's packaged well so that it looks like a real fun surprise. There's a pink bow, of course, around it, so it separates itself from the other boxes. But the most important pieces to that surprise box is sort of two things. One, there's a personalized letter from the manager or the owner of the business, and that just says, hey, uses someone's first name. We loved helping you today. Hopefully you enjoyed it, whatever, you know, just either way, it's just a personal letter to them. And then there's always a personalized item inside that box as well. And so if they're have a sports allegiance to, you know, whatever team locally, or maybe they're living on the other side of the world and they have another affinity for whatever team, we try to find out something unique about every one of our customers and then use that to our advantage. We want to know as much about our customers because we want to create this wow experience that makes them think, holy cow. And so we put that gift, whatever it is, inside the box, and we leave it behind, and there's no call to action there. We don't ask for a review. We don't say, hey, give us a big tip. We just leave it there and don't measure it even. We just want people to sort of feel it and live it. And so those are some of the things. I could keep going because we have so much fun with some of the things that we do here, but those are some of the highlights of our CX offering.
Well, all I can say is the sooner that Pink Zebra opens up a franchise in the UK, the better. Now, customer love doesn't just sound good on paper. It makes absolute business and economic sense. When I spoke to the legendary Fred Reichhold, creator of the NPS survey, he revealed that for his own personal investment strategy, he backed those companies with the highest NPS in their sector. And that portfolio beat the median return in North America public companies by 500%. Putting it in the top 95 percentile of all private equity funds over the last 15 years. Fred also explained that there are fundamentally two ways a business can grow. Earned growth, which is through customers coming back and bringing their friends, and bought growth, which is through paid advertising. Here's a clip of Fred discussing these two approaches and what they mean for your business.
In those businesses where we separate bought growth, which are the advertising, special marketing deals, promotional tactics, the 64% of marketing spend that you referred to, those customers have a lower lifetime value than the customers that come in that are earned through referral or great reputation. And it's far greater difference than most companies are aware of, because the company that's come in on referral, obviously, you don't need the advertising expenditure or the marketing promotion, that expense. But there's a positive selection going on where people who are coming in that way have more realistic expectations. They have friends who recommended them, who will set things right and sometimes educate and train them. And so when you look at the longevity of a referred customer, it can be far, far longer, twice, three times as many years as a bought customer, and they buy more stuff. Their loan losses, bad credits are superior, are more favorable. You add it all up, you find out referred customers can be 3 to 10 times more profitable than a bought customer. In fact, in mature industries, what I'm finding is bought customers actually are net present value negative. The CAC is bigger than the lifetime value, but because businesses have cut themselves in silos, it's hard for them to track the economics. They look at the marketing department and the sales guys. Okay, I'm going to evaluate you on how many new customers you can come in on with a certain budget, and you're optimizing cost for a new customer. And they have no idea which of those customers are turning into wonderful, profitable promoters and which ones are detractors and are defecting within a year or two, and telling all their friends how bad the business is. And so you get this self-defeating loop going on in, I would say, most businesses today.
Now, on the topic of business economics, one of the most powerful episodes we've recorded to date was with Carol Myers. Carol is a partner at venture capital group Glasswing Ventures and has held many independent board of director and CMO roles. Now, in a time of grow at all costs, which is certainly where a lot of businesses were during the pandemic, it made sense that the value of businesses could be looked at mainly through the lens of how many new customers were coming through the door. But as Carol explains, VC groups are now looking for those companies she describes as being customer love businesses. In other words, those that have the highest retention and referral rates. Now, whether you're in a business pursuing a round of funding or not, The key takeaway here is that the value of a company lies in how well they're treating their customers, so they keep coming back and bringing their friends. Have a listen to what Carol had to say.
What venture people are looking for, they are looking at the founders, the product, and that go-to-market. And this idea of being a referable customer, or one that is renewing and staying with you and perhaps buying more, becomes incredibly important because it tells you a couple things. It tells you how good is the product and how defensible is the product. Because if whatever you're offering, whether it's a product or it's a service, is not really meeting the expectations of the customer, they're going to go find something else, right? So they're going to move on. So it's a very strong indicator of how good of a product or a service is this company building if their customers are staying with them. Is the customer getting value out of it? And then if you get to the point of customer love, where customers are recommending your product or service to other people, now you've got a business that's going to grow quickly and grow cost effectively, which is really important. I think what we've seen even in the public markets and in the private markets as well, is much more of a push towards efficiency versus growth at all costs that we saw earlier on. And part of being efficient is having a product or a service that customers are truly getting value out of, truly love, are going to continue to use and buy, are going to recommend to other people. That's how you're going to build a strong, sustainable business. If you've got high growth of new customers, you know, that's fabulous. But if you can't retain them, then you're going to have a very costly go-to-market model and an unsustainable business, because you're going to start at some point, you know, your growth is going to slow. You're going to have won as many new customers as you possibly can. And if they're leaving you at the back end, you know, you don't have a sustainable business. You don't have a base there. Eventually, you can't grow anymore because you just can't keep filling the bucket of the people who are leaving you and not staying with you and buying more from you. So that's become a really important realization. And it's wrapped up into, what is your customer acquisition cost? What is your lifetime value? If you want those two things to be good, a low cost and a high value, the only way you get there is with amazing retention, what we call net dollar retention. So upsell, cross-sell, and the huge bonus, the thing that's really going to accelerate your business, is customers who love you and are telling other people about you.
Now, something that I've heard time and again on the show is that to be a truly customer-centric business, your entire organization, from the boardroom to the front line, needs to be championing customer love. It is not just the responsibility of one person or one team. Rather, customer happiness needs to be rooted in your company values, embodied in your brand tone of voice, and even considered for the type of people you look to employ. Now, when I spoke to the wonderful Brittany Hodak, author of bestseller Creating Superfans, she put this in a really eloquent way. Here's what she had to say.
Your brand isn't your logo. Your brand is the interactions that your customers are having with your team every day. So every single person on your team needs to be aligned around the idea of improving customers' lives. Now, we were talking a little bit before we started recording about NPS and CSAT, and, you know, obviously there are lots of different measures of a customer's affinity for your brand, but I truly believe there are only three types of interactions that any of us ever have as customers. And this is true of, you know, every single person out there listening. At the end of any experience, whether it's small, whether it's, you know, extended, whether it's with one person, whether it's a lot of people, you feel one of exactly three ways: better, worse, or the same. It's going to be a net positive experience, a net negative experience, or a net neutral experience. And if you can align everyone on your team around the idea of, hey, every time we are with a customer, we're going to leave them a little bit better than we found them. Maybe that's through a compliment. Maybe that's through a smile. Maybe that's through a nice little bonus that we're offering them. Whatever it is, if you can leave people just a little bit better than you found them, they will remember. They will feel that when they come back, they'll start to think, oh yeah, I always feel a little bit better after I engage or interact with this company. And it doesn't matter what it is that you're selling, you can absolutely improve the quality of the experiences that the people have when they are in your orbit.
Now, while customer experience is the responsibility of the entire organization, we do, of course, have dedicated teams helping to drive these strategies forward. And I find it fascinating speaking to those people on the front line to get a real understanding of their approach to customer love and how it forms a critical part of their strategy. One such conversation I had was with Sureya Liazafan. Sureya is a global CRM and CX expert who specializes in the luxury retail space, having worked for the likes of Louis Vuitton, Burberry and Ganni. I spoke to Sureya about why targeting and nurturing your biggest advocates is just as important as your biggest spenders. Here's a clip of what he had to say.
How much a customer spent with you is, in my view, a narrow retrospective way of looking at your customer base. And whilst it does drive revenue, and it's nice to sort of boast about in cross-functional meetings and give yourself a pat on the back for, ultimately, that VIP base doesn't actually shift the needle commercially as much as driving incrementality from the rest of the base. So if you're nurturing from the bottom, you will get, you know, your future VIPs, but you will also, as you say, by delivering an experience that's exceeding their expectations. And as a new customer, it's very easy to exceed people's expectations because they don't expect to be treated like a VIP in any way whatsoever. And often in my experience, these new customers are surprised and delighted that they're being invited to things and considered for things and having the opportunity to bring their friends along to these things as well, being the person that unlocks the door for other people. And that engagement ultimately drives retention in my experience. Yeah, as an example, for one of the top products that first time customers buy when I was at Louis Vuitton was a particular type of bag, a very entry-level bag, a tote bag in sort of monogram canvas. Nothing remarkable about it, relatively speaking. But, you know, for a first-time customer, it's a big step to buying into luxury. And what we decided to look at was engaging this specific group of first-time customers. And so we organized events, styling events, and other events specifically for that group. And what we discovered post sort of pilot was that there was a 25% incrementality on retention versus the rest of the base for this particular group. So it was looking at a high engagement piece, but then elevating that engagement and celebrating that engagement through, I guess, non-commercial or less commercial means and actually letting the retention deal with itself.
Now, you may be a marketer listening to this thinking, okay, this all sounds great, but I've got a million and one other competing priorities. Why should I prioritize this now and not in 12 to 24 months' time? Well, I put this very question to Angela Porter. Angela is a vastly experienced marketing leader, having worked at the likes of Dunelm, Tesco and Ladbrokes, and more recently as CMO of ProCook, where she helped to roll out their customer advocacy program with Mention Me. Here's what she had to say.
Thinking 12 or 24 months time, other businesses would be ahead of you if you were thinking about it then. And the reason that I say that is, you know, 10 years ago, the channels that we had to choose from as marketeers were limited. 5 years ago, there were far more of them. And now it's every single time a customer comes into contact with anything digital, anything visual that's marketing related, it's just throwing messages at them. So the kind of proliferation of marketing channels has never been so kind of extreme. And making sure that you're using trusted channels to speak to customers will become more and more and more important because, you know, people are believing they're believing media messages less, right? So whether that's news messages and political messages or advertising messages, people are believing things less and they want truth and they want to make their own minds up. That allows them to research a lot online. It allows them to speak to people. You know, social media being the go-to platform for most people to get any type of referral or trusted review, that just wasn't there 10 years ago and it is now. And I think that as customers have all of those tools available to them right at their fingertips or at the end of the phone with friends or families, having that trusted element as the first step of someone hearing about a brand is just bypassing all of that stuff that you usually have to do with awareness and kind of softer consideration, where, you know, if you're the person that I go to speak about cars and you tell me to go and explore a certain brand of car, I'll just do it because I trust you. And I think that if you can do it correctly for customers, then I think it will cut out a lot of other types of channel spend, which might be a bit more broadcast reaching, but less trusted. I think the other thing that's really, really important is you as a customer, you as a human being, will only attach your name to something that kind of does you proud, right? That's a really Scottish phrase, but there we go. It kind of gives you a bit of pride. So if even if you're being offered a discount or a promotional code from a brand to get you to refer to another person, you're not going to do it if that's going to reflect badly on you. You're not going to do it if your friend or family or contact is going to have a bad experience. So the nature of trust in that is already absolutely inherent, because you're not going to attach your name to anything that you don't believe in. With other types of advertising and other types of messaging, a brand is never going to tell you that something's not going to be great. A brand's obviously going to tell you the story and the messaging, which may be 100% true, but you're going to have to make your own mind up about that, versus me saying, no, honestly, this was the experience I had. There's no debate about it. This was the experience I had. It's going to be so much more deeper in terms of that emotional connection from a very kind of early doors than it would be, as I said earlier, if you have to go through that funnel.
Now, customer loyalty is one of the hottest topics out there for marketers. And one of the fundamental questions that they're tackling is, if my customer is coming back and spending more, does that automatically make them loyal to my brand? And what I've learned from a number of guests is that repeat custom is often a marriage of convenience and can be as easily taken away as it is given. Just because I have, I don't know, a loyalty card for a local coffee shop doesn't mean I wouldn't drop them for a new one that's just opened up down the road if they had a more appealing offer to entice me. True customer loyalty means your customers have built a deep emotional connection with your brand that they will stay with you through thick and thin. And to talk about this in detail, we were joined by Shep Hykin. Shep is a legend in the CX space and a world-renowned New York Times and Wall Street Journal best-selling author. Here's what Shep had to say about how to close the loyalty gap in your business.
Oftentimes, repeat business is confused with a loyal customer. And we must understand why the customer keeps coming back. And once we understand that, then we'll understand what we need to do to keep them. For example, why do they come back? Maybe the location is, and I'm going to just use some consumer type examples, although it applies to the B2B business to business world as well. Maybe the reason this customer chooses to come to my location is because it's the most convenient location. Well, what would happen if a competitor moved in a little bit closer? Maybe the customer comes to me because I do have, as you mentioned, the lower price. What happens when the store down the street offers a price? So what we understand is that customers aren't loyal to our stores, to our businesses. They're loyal to location. They're loyal to a number, a price. And all of that puts us at risk. Repeat business can be taken away from you. Loyalty, however, should be an emotional connection that the customer has with the company they do business with. Maybe it's somebody inside the business. Maybe it's the feeling of trust and confidence. You know, Amazon, we're never dealing with a customer service rep or a salesperson. We're doing it all ourselves. But why do we keep going back? Because we trust that every time we buy something, we're going to get an email that says, the purchase has been made. The purchase is being shipped. Then the purchase has been delivered. And when we start to feel confident that things are going to happen, that's emotion, confidence. And that builds trust. Trust creates loyalty. That's where it all goes.
I wanted to end this episode on the subject of gifting. Gifting is a strategy many brands implement to create deeper emotional connections with their customers to help turn them into loyal fans. But gifting isn't as simple as you may think. There's an awful lot to consider if you really want to nail your strategy. And there's arguably nobody better placed to discuss the topic of gifting than Lash Ferry. Lash is the founder and president of Distinctive Assets, the official gifting company of the Grammys. Now, as well as getting some very unique stories about the many award shows that he's worked on, which certainly made me look at some of my favorite celebrities in a whole new light, I spoke with Lash about some of the key considerations when it comes to gifting. Here's a clip of what he had to say.
I think a lot of people who aren't particularly great at gifting, when you take a look at why they aren't, it's because they're giving it from their own perspective. What would they like? What are they passionate about? Like, we're going to, you know, it drives me crazy when I get these little Christmas cards that say a donation has been made in your name to blah, 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 fill in the blank. You know, I got one last year, it was to the SPCA. Well, that's great. It's an animal rights organization. They do great work. I don't particularly like animals. It's not a cause that I'm passionate about. It's not something that resonates with me. And so when you do something that's all about you, I think that you forget that the key part of a gift is really not about you. It's about the person receiving it. So making sure that that's always your perspective. It's sort of the same thing about logos. Like, I think sometimes brands get so focused on our logo has to be front and center. I was like, it actually doesn't. Like, if it's a coffee mug and you're State Farm Insurance, like, no one now wants to use the coffee mug because it's set your logo like front and center as opposed to figuring out something cool. Like, we're working with Johnson & Johnson on this really cool initiative and they called it Elevate. So everything was about elevating the female perspective within their company. So anything we branded said Elevate on it, and maybe Johnson & Johnson appeared underneath the mug or somewhere else. But now when you're holding your coffee mug, it says Elevate, which is sort of a much higher brow perspective. And the person using it still knows where it came from. They still remember that it's a Johnson & Johnson item. Same thing with engraving. I think sometimes we did these cheese boards for a brand and they wanted to put their logo on it. I'm like, well, why don't we deboss the logo instead of like engraving it on the outside? That way it's more subtle. So I think subtlety goes a long way when it comes to logoing, like putting your logo on the inside of the robe versus front and center on the outside. Like, there's little things that will make it a more meaningful gift for the recipient versus just about what you want as the giver.
So there we have it. A look back at some of the key lessons from our first 50 episodes. And you know what? Listening back to some of those inspiring conversations, I honestly can't wait to record the next 50. Thank you so much for continuing to listen, and until next time. You've been listening to the Business of Customer Love podcast, hosted by Mention Me. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to join us next time where we'll be speaking to some more amazing guests about how you can harness the power of customer love. See you again soon.